Today's presentation is by Ethel Struthers and Helen Christensen. Ethel has been involved with the Regina Unitarians off and on since she first started attending with her parents as a child. She went on to study psychology and education. She is currently certified in choice theory and teaches grades 4 or 5 with the Regina Public School Board. Helen is a retired University of Regina professor and is the current chair of the Sunday Service Committee. She and her husband Bruno, our lay chaplain, have lived in Regina since 1989. They have been members of the fellowship for about 3 years. Welcome.
Very briefly, to begin with, in terms of an overview, atheism does have a venerable tradition. It already started in ancient Greece when Diagoras was kicked out of Athens for impiety. And then we move already on to the 19th century, and again, some of the greatest minds in the modern world were atheists. Friedrich Nietzsche, Karl Marx, Sigmund Freud, Jean-Paul Sartre, but so too then were also many of modernity's most brutal dictators. So you've got Mao Zedong, Joseph Stalin, we've got Lenin, Pol Pot, and So I'll leave it with that. Now, in terms of numbers, again, atheism is not a great religion in terms of numbers, and it's always been more for the elites than the ordinary folk. And in fact, up until the 20th century, its influence on the world's history was non-existent. Even today, the impact of atheism outside of Europe is inconsequential. And then at the time that this book was published, in 2010, the Gallup poll found 9% of adults in Western Europe described themselves as convinced atheists, 4% in Eastern and Central Europe, 3% in Latin America, 2% in the Middle East, and 1% in North America and Africa. However, in the past 10 years, the number of books on atheism have definitely been part of the bestseller lists. And as always with Prothero, he includes the political part, and he has pointed out that President Barack Obama's, in 2009, during his inaugural address, he called the United States a nation of Christian, Muslims, Jews, Hindus, and non-believers. So it has now become far more commonplace. So as a result of that, because of its growing kind of population or popularity, it definitely deserves some attention here. And I think its impact definitely on the discussions that have been going back and forth between the vices and the virtues as they talk about God talk. So it's definitely been far more in the media. Now, atheists take aim at organized religion and groupthink. They defend reason over revelation, logic over faith, and science experimentation over magical thinking. So as the term implies, however, atheism is first and foremost about denying the existence of God. Theoretically, atheists deny the existence of all deities. So they argue that the human problem cannot be solved by religion because religion is the problem. They hold that religious belief is man-made and murderous, irrational, superstitious, and hazardous to our health. Thus they say that the solution is to flush the poison out of the system and follow the courageous examples of heroic unbelievers. From Diagoras, again to Freud, to the patron saints of the new atheism. You've got American writer Sam Harris, American philosopher Daniel Dennett, British evolutionary biologist Richard Dawkins, British American journalist Christopher Hitchens, and the French philosopher Michel Onfray. So in the end, all this cleansing will lead to a post-religious utopia. Without the foolishness of faith, all will be well, and all manner of things will be well. Now, however, as with anything, not all atheists are created equal. And so some describe themselves as secularists, humanists, free thinkers, skeptics, or rationalists. And some, because of the stigma attached to atheism, have selected alternatives such as Brights, is the term. And of this group, numbering 50,000 members, three of the more well-known ones are Harvard psychology professor Steven Pinker and new atheists Daniel Dennett and Richard Dawkins. Some distinguish between strong atheists, those who actively deny God, and weak atheists, those who simply do not affirm God. Now, but the distinction between the angry and the friendly atheism, I guess, is more useful. Now, new atheists exemplify the angry type, and their aggression is kind of evangelic and on the attack and courting converts. They see the contest between religion and reason as a zero-sum game. Now, according to Dawkins, faith is one of the world's great evils, comparable to the smallpox virus, but harder to eradicate. Now, according to Harris, theology is ignorance with wings. And according to Hitchens, organized religion is violent, irrational, intolerant, allied to racism and tribalism and bigotry, invested in ignorance and hostile to free inquiry, contemptuous of women. Now, in earlier times, skeptics such as Mark Twain took aim at fundamentalists and revivalists. However, the new atheist complaining is more comprehensive. Now, it's against the sins and the wickedness of the Western monotheism. Now, this is, I think, where the change has... I find this next part particularly interesting, where in decades past, there was, you know, with kind of, it was referred to as a gentleman's agreement to keep the faith or lack thereof to themselves. However, three events happened that basically changed things. Now, the first thing that happened was that the U.S. religious right began in the late 1970s to put God to partisan political purposes, which then prompted atheists with different political views to go public with their criticism of God think. Now, the second thing that happened was that the Muslim, at that time, Muslim religion was pouring into Europe and edging about 5% of the population in the Netherlands and 10% of the population in France. And then finally, another event that happened was terrorists who hijacked then the four jets and steered themselves and thousands of others to their death September 11th, 2001. So as a result of these events led many to worry about the public power of religion. The gloves came off, and the new atheists came to see themselves as pugilists for reason, for logic, and for common sense. As increasing number of atheists became convinced that religion was a real and present, more and more of them came to believe that putting the wrecking ball to it was a personal duty and a public good. So Dawkins identified that day, September 11th, 2001, as the tipping point between the old atheism and the new. So as he had said, many of us saw religion as harmless nonsense. Beliefs might lack all the supporting evidence, but we thought, if people need a crutch for consolation, what's the harm? Now, September 11th changed all this and revealed faith is not harmless nonsense. It can be lethally dangerous nonsense, and dangerous because it gives people unshakable confidence in their own righteousness. Dangerous because it gives them false courage to kill themselves, which automatically removes normal barriers to killing others. And dangerous because we all have bought into a weird respect, which uniquely protects religion from normal criticism. So let's now stop being so damned respectful. Now, For these new atheists and their followers, the problem, it's not religious fanaticism. It's the problem is religion itself. So, now having said this, then what we now have is we have Chris Hedges, who's a former Middle East bureau chief for the New York Times. Now he now begins to look and describe the new atheism as kind of a secular version of the religious right, which portrays the Muslim world in a language that is as racist, crude, and intolerant as that used by Pat Robertson or Jerry Falwell. So for him, he asks the question, is it so hard to see that human beings are as capable of killing in the name of progress and the proletariat as they are in the name of tradition and God? So one of history's most dangerous games begins with dividing the world into the good guys and the bad guys, and it ends with using any means necessary to take the villains out. New atheists now, according to Prothero, new atheists play this game with vigor, demonizing the Muslims, denouncing the Christians and the Jews as dupes, and baptizing their fellow brights into their own communion of the smarter-than-thou saints. Now, they too are dogmatic and uncurious and every bit as useful to the neoconservative policymakers as the right-wing televangelists. Now, new atheists also fume against the anti-intellectualism of religion. Now, again, he would say, but yet when it comes to making their own case, these brights, they don't just, according to Prothero, mimic their fundamentalist opponents, they even go them one better. Because he says most people of faith, they still harbor some doubt. But the supposedly open minds of the new atheists are settled and sure that there is nary an opening in their for any genuine conversation. So every refusal of a person of faith to come over to the atheist side is viewed not as a principal disagreement, but as evidence of stupidity or malice. So aside sort of from the outrage, the main emotion in these books for Prothero is kind of a smug exasperation, which is kind of asking the question, why isn't the rest of the world kind of exactly like us? Now, then it comes to, as we move on now, is atheism a religion? And one view that was put forth by novelist David Foster believes that atheism is an anti-religion, which worships reason, skepticism, intellect, empirical proof, human autonomy, and self-determination. A second view is that whether atheism is a religion really depends on what actual atheists do and believe. And so the answer will vary from person to person or group to group. And religion is defined, now on the one hand, religion is defined by judges and scholars alike, kind of in a functional rather than substantive terms, basically because atheism, you know, walked and talked like a religion, it could be treated as one. And then essentially, so instead of focusing on some sort of creedal criterion, such as a belief in God, what they refer to when they're taking a look at whether or not something can call itself a religion is whether or not it refers to as these family resemblances, and that has to be with, there's basically a formula. So does it have a creed then? Does it have some sort of a code of ethics? Is there some sort of culture around it? And does it at the same time have some sort of a community? And he would go on to say that there might be a case that could be made for that for some. You know, atheists, you could say, definitely have a creed. By definition, they agree on the dogma that there is no God, just as monotheists agree on a dogma that there is one. He would go on to say it's a bit more difficult to see whether or not there is a a culture or a set of rites attributed to it. And I found this an example that I didn't like very much, but it's like no special holidays or. But then when you get on to whether or not there's definitely ethical conduct, there's no doubt about that, that atheists boast to have definitely a code of ethical conduct. And then following that, there definitely are some communities around it where there are definitely opportunities for the children to be involved in other activities and themselves as well. So again, it goes back to depending on whom and, you know, how you want to define it. Not all atheists are religious. Some take their atheist creed with a shrug, steering clear of, as it's referred to as, occultist codes or the communities of the atheist kin. And for others, however, atheism is, in the words of the German theologian Paul Tillich, an ultimate concern, and it stands at the center of their lives, defining who they are, how they think, and with whom they associate. And for these people, at least, atheism may be the solution to the problem of religion. But that solution then becomes religious nonetheless. Then he refers to, though, there's the other term, having spoken about the angry atheists, then there's the friendly atheists. I mean, and it's a new atheism. Most atheists today are really far less dogmatic than the ones that have been referred to earlier in the New Atheism. So the website, The Friendly Atheist, defines the referred to as kindler, gentler type, as someone who can talk to a religious person without invoking argument and questions his or own beliefs as much as other beliefs and does not think someone is inferior for believing in God. There are instances where now... And then, as we move on, there are instances where both can be found at the same place, as was the case where Prothero attended an atheism rally at Harvard University in 2009. And there he heard the arguments from the new atheists, religious people, and kind of, if it's put in its most crudest form, religious people are stupid and religion is poison, so the only way forward is to end it, end the idiocy, and flush away the poison. And the second argument was less controversial and less utopian. Atheism is not it's not an infallible truth, but a valid point, a view deserving of a fair hearing. The goal is not a world without religion, but a world in which believers and non-believers coexist in a spirit of mutual toleration. Now, it was here, too, that he heard the one female speaker, Amanda Gulledge, a self-described Alabama mom who had got on her first plane and rode her first subway for this event, and she talked from the heart about the natural goodness of her two sons, who somehow managed to be moral without believing in God. And the key turn in her talk and the event itself was when she mentioned in passing that how some neighborhood children refused to play with her boys because they had not accepted Jesus as her Savior. So, according to Prothero, there seems to be a new kind of atheism, a new atheism with a very different agenda from what is called the Four Horsemen of the Angry Atheists, and that's the Hitchin, Harris, Dawkins, and Dennett. The friendlier one sounds more like kind of a civil rights movement than a crusade. So I guess from finally and last kind of comment, if the hope is to pummel into submission every theist, then the movement has little chance of success. But if the hope is that children can play with each other without regard for the religious beliefs of their parents, then this is the wave for all to catch. And I think I'd like to just maybe finish with one last thing. I was looking at one of the talks by Sam Harris. And one of the things that he basically, in his particular talk, he was saying he really didn't like the word atheist at all. He just really wanted to have intellectual honesty. I mean, that's all, you know. And I just really wanted to make sure that that got included, because I think that that definitely, from what I've seen, has been very much the goal. And it's been a very frustrating journey. And... But it is that intellectual honesty that is is really aimed for. Okay.
So it's my turn. Ethel and I work so well together that we both have colds at the same time. So, you know, and we weren't even, you know, maybe over the phone or something. This was very challenging. You know, there are 10 pages as a conclusion. That's not very much, is it? But my goodness, just trying to go over it and over it to try to get make sure that I got the essence of it. Anyway, got it down to 3 pages. So here is the conclusion then. And these are all Prothero's words. It is easy to imagine that the task of the great religions is to transport and transform us. In other words, to take us to another place in body and in spirit. The world's religions promise the magic of metamorphosis. But even in traditions of escape from the sin and suffering of this world, religion works not so much to help us flee from our humanity as to bring us home to it. Often our humanity lies ahead of us as achievement rather than inheritance. The Tao, or the path, has 10,000 gates, say the masters. To explore the great religions is to wander through these 10,000 gates. It is to enter into Hindu conversations on the logic of karma. And remember, that's your actions in this state that will decide your future. So the logic of karma and rebirth. To enter into Christian conversations on the mechanics of sin and resurrection. And Taoist conversations on flourishing here and now. Each religion offers its own diagnosis of the human problem and its own prescription for a cure. Each offers its own techniques for reaching its religious goal and its own exemplars for emulation. Muslims say pride is the problem. Christians say salvation is the solution. Education and ritual are key Confucian techniques. The world's great religions converge at points. Some of the questions they ask overlap, as do some of the answers. All their adherents are human beings with human bodies and human failings. So each of these religions attends to our embodiment and to the human predicament, not least by defining what it is to be fully alive. Religious folk go about this task in different ways. Confucians believe we become fully human by entwining ourselves in intricate networks of social relations. Taoists believe we become fully human by disentangling ourselves from social relations. For Muslims, Muhammad's 3 core human qualities are piety, combativeness, and generosity. If the Tao has 10,000 gates, so do the great religions. It is up to each of us to find our own path. For those who find such a path, it is tempting to lapse into the sort of naive godthink that lumps all other religious paths into either opposites or mirror images of your own. The new atheists see all religions, except their own anti-religious religion, as the same idiocy, the same poison. The perennial philosophers see all religions as the same truth, the same compassion. What both camps fail to see is religious diversity. Rather than 10,000 gates, they see only one. Prothero hopes for a world in which human beings get along no matter what to their religion. After all, every day across the world, human beings coexist peacefully and even joyfully with family members who are very different from themselves. What is required in any relationship is knowing who the other person really is. In relationships and religions, denying differences is a recipe for disaster. What works is understanding the differences and then coming to accept them. And this I found very powerful. I started thinking about it. He said, you know when we say we agree to disagree? He says, after all, it is not possible to agree to disagree until you see just what the disagreements might be. In the past, interfaith dialogue was more or less restricted to religious liberals. Today, however, young people are forging a new path that is open to traditional believers and to non-believers as well. This new path recognizes that genuine dialogue across religious boundaries must recognize the existence of these boundaries and the fundamental differences between them. There are two ways to talk about religion. A religious way, talking about creeds and gods and rituals, and a secular way, which aims to simply observe and to report as objectively as possible on this thing that human beings do, for good or ill or both. The problem with God-think of either the new atheist or the perennial philosophy variety is that each camp fails to see what should be obvious to any outsider, that theirs are theological positions too. If religion did not matter, this collective confusion would not cloud our understanding of the world. But people act every day on the basis of religious beliefs and behaviors that outsiders see as foolish or dangerous or worse. And this last part makes me think in many ways of our Unitarian principles and sources. So, to reckon with the world as it is, we need religious literacy. We need to know something about the basic beliefs and practices of the world's religions. Prothero has outlined how the eight rival religions wrestle with the human predicament: problems, solutions, techniques, and exemplars. He has shown how different religions emphasize different dimensions of religion. The ethical and ritual dimensions in Confucianism, for example, and the legal and narrative dimensions in Judaism. And I like this next part. For Prothero, there is no shortage of religious and anti-religious name-calling. What is missing is this second way of talking about religion, a voice that sounds more like old-fashioned news gathering. In other words, trying to understand rather than comment upon. Religious people do offer solutions to the human predicament as they see it. Yet, these solutions often open up more questions than they close down. This leads Prothero to conclude that to claim all religions are one is no more effective than to claim that all religions are poison. And I'll read his closing words. Far more powerful is the reminder that any genuine belief in what we call God should humble us, remind us that if there really is a God or goddess worthy of the name, he or she or it must surely know more than we do about the things that matter most. This much, at least, is shared across the great religions. So, that was it then.
Are there any questions or comments?
Thank you. Thank you very much. I think we've all got gold. Very thoughtful and informative and useful. I enjoyed it. I come from the atheistic perspective myself. I recall decades ago when studying sociology, in our textbook there was a study of students who were becoming ministers. And I think it was about two-thirds of them admitted to not believing in God. I found that interesting at the time. I don't know what this study would be today. In a website called about.com, you can link up to a lot of different newsletters, one of which is about atheism, and I think it's called Atheism. It might have a more direct address if you wanted to go directly there, but you could find it through about.com. And when I first went there, there was quite a study about comments about atheism and its varieties of interpretation. And I found that very helpful and useful. And I create a little file. And whenever I get the newsletter two or three times a month or whatever, I just put it in the file. And I'll say one of these days I'll get back there to explore it a little more. But when it does come, it comments about the world events and all sorts of things from an atheistic perspective. So there's lots of meat there, but I just don't have the time to get to it. And I'll maybe just mention, too, that Ethel mentioned Mark Twain. I read a quote recently from him, and I'm not going to get it exactly correct, but he said that man was made at the end of a week's work when God was tired.
But not woman.
I'd like to just comment on, I was reflecting on my own background and how grateful I am for the incredibly diverse background that I had. I grew up in a family that was a practicing Catholic, but people were very open-minded, and several of my uncles and so on were atheists, Anglicans, Presbyterians, and what have you. And the school that I went to was a convent run by Dominican nuns. And I won't go into the history about why this was the case, but we always had about 50% of the kids were non-Catholics. And that included a healthy dose of Jews, Greek Orthodox, and what have you. In my last year of school, which was 1964, I had a Muslim and a Hindu in class with me at a convent. And I celebrated Eid with them. and knew about what that festival was. I also had the teacher in that class was a woman who was a convert to Catholicism, but who made every effort she could to ensure that we were aware of other belief systems, took us to visit the synagogue, took us to visit a mosque, and so on. And I also remember trips with my mother going to South Africa where we visited Hindu temples and mosques and all sorts of things, and all sorts of places. And I look back and I sort of think about this, and I think that my ability to just sort of accept what is comes out of that acceptance. We also lived in a Jewish neighborhood. comes out of the breadth that was just a given through my childhood. And although, you know, some of my family still are practicing Catholics, but very few. But I really appreciate that even within the context of the institutional church, people were so open-minded. And I think that that's what we need to be, is open-minded and accepting. Not to say that we don't bear in mind the sort of militancy of whether it's the Islamic fundamentalists or the Christian fundamentalists or whoever, that can be very dangerous forces, but that we bear in mind that belief systems of different kinds can lead people to do good things as well as bad things. Anyway, thank you.
Andrew. I saw two hands. Maybe we'll have time for both. Okay.
I wanted to say thank you so much for having this series and introducing the Prothero book in the fellowship before you started the series, actually. Wasn't it?
She did it.
Yeah. And I know I read the book, and for each of the installments that we've had, I've learned new things in each session. I could read that book 10 times and still be getting something new out of it. And this is something I really appreciate about the fellowship, is that I'm always learning something new. And a book like this, and having this kind of program that actually gives us the opportunity to take a step back and have an overview. I think that that's very helpful for people as we are on our own paths, on our own journeys, in search of truth and meaning in our lives. So I just wanted to say a special kind of thank you for the kind of presentations that have helped to, make that work well, contextualize it, and help us to see the wisdom through the mist.
I just want to say, one of the things that I got out of this book, besides learning a whole lot of new things, is that the key is religious literacy. I think that's a very important thing. We can understand what we know.
One more question. Great.
I just want to say thank you, too. I've really enjoyed, you know, the dedication that you've both shown and the interesting way you present. Like, both of you are really very good at that, so thank you. And just one quick note, there was a man, I'm very bad at names, and I'm getting worse, but there was a fundamentalist Christian, I think from Texas or southern United States, and he died this last week. Fred Phelps. And on CBC, there was a discussion about whether people should be rejoicing his death, because he caused so much suffering, particularly for lesbian, gay, transgendered people, and also many other people. I can't remember all of the areas where he held a lot of hatred. But, you know, I do think we have to illuminate, show people that this is not, you know, somehow acceptable, because if we accept that this is part of the religion, and often religion is used as a screen and an excuse then for all that dreadful behavior.
I just sort of feel like making one final comment. I think the new atheists have been, I think they've been very good too at trying to illuminate, you know, where, I'll just maybe leave it with that. But I think they've really tried to make a point of trying to demonstrate where a lot of, you know, you want to say inconsistencies or things like that. That just doesn't seem to cover it. But have some of the monstrous things that have occurred within religions.